Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 161.
This week on the podcast, get ready. We're about to coin the term Bernie-monium because it's happening.
The latest Hillary Clinton email dump proves that she was right to ask to borrow a book on how to email better. Next up, a book on better Twittering.
SCOTUS reminds America that while the majority of them aren't stupid, at least five are pure evil.
And California decides that one massive measles outbreak was enough, even if it means taking on Jenny McCarthy.
Greece does what the world's been trying to do for millennia, telling Germany to fuck off.
And if we've known anything since the first podcast, it's that losing your mattress endorsement is the beginning of the end. Bye-bye, Donald.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Exciting week.
Exciting week, not because news happened this week, right, but because great things happened this week.
Right, and that's what we're going to start with.
We're going to start with Bernie-monium, as we've coined it. There's that's no great way to have a Bernie word, by the way.
No.
People have been saying Bernie-mania, Bernie-mentum. Those are all things that sound as ridiculous as Bernie-monium. We're fans of Bernie-monium.
Yeah, we're going with that.
I don't know why. Yeah, but in any case, he spoke to a crowd of 10,000 people in Madison on Wednesday.
Yeah.
10,000 people.
It was a giant stadium full of people.
Yeah. The only person so far in this electoral cycle who has given a speech to a crowd larger than that is Ted Cruz. And that was his announcement where all of the students of Liberty University were required
to
attend.
Go. Right.
Yeah. So no one is even touching Bernie Sanders on this.
No, not even close.
So he's been sort of traveling the Midwest, traveling to various towns in both Iowa and New Hampshire and then outside of those places.
Yeah. Well, and he's doing what is, you know, because there are sort of like, he's had a lot of big rallies in places that like don't have early contests.
Right.
Like, you know, Wisconsin doesn't, Colorado doesn't have an early one. But this is sort of like part of a bigger game, too.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was talking about this 10,000 person rally. It didn't matter. It could have been on the moon. Like, it was important that that's how many people showed up. And then he had a news cycle for it.
And
basically,
he's getting like, all of these numbers in swing states. P.S.
Well, right. Exactly.
I mean, he's getting a lot of excitement in states where you think, see, I think that you think of a swing state electorate as being relatively moderate, not being made up of two factions of people on either side of the aisle that are on the far ends of the... I mean, we know Wisconsin is a crazy state.
Crazy.
So we know Wisconsin's up to shenanigans.
Yeah.
But like places like Colorado, places like that, you think of the swing stateness of those states being deriving from their sort of general moderateness.
Right.
And that's not... He's kind of showing that that's not really the case here.
Yeah.
That there is like a real excited pocket of support for a candidate like him in those states.
Yeah.
And in those sort of like swing state primaries, he really is someone to fear.
Right. And at the beginning of the campaign, you know, his campaign was just sort of, I think, kind of freewheeling around the country, just giving a bunch of like fun speeches and stuff like that.
Yes.
Right. So, but now they're starting to, I think, pull their shit together a little bit too, because this event that they had, first off, they were asking for RSVPs online, so they were getting everybody's email address and everything. And then also everybody who like came into the building was also being registered, like with campaign volunteers or staff, like getting their emails and their phone numbers and their zip codes. And so they're trying to build this into fundraising efforts. They're trying to keep track of who their supporters are to be able
to
get
a volunteer
information
force
to them, a volunteer
put together.
Force, right, exactly. And they're starting to do that now at his other large events, which are happening everywhere.
Right. So, no, it's a good, I mean, I think probably, I bet that some of these other fringe candidates like Kucinich never really had to do any of this.
No.
Because they were just sort
there
of like there.
There was never any concern.
There was never any concern that they were going to need to have a large volunteer force.
Right.
But this is like a new step for a candidate who I think only months ago was considered very fringy.
Yeah.
The fact that they're even going to derive benefit from doing this is like a worrying sign for the other candidates in the race. No one else has these kind of operations set up yet besides Hillary, and she's not drawing these kinds of crowds.
No. Now, not that I want to defend Hillary Clinton. She hasn't yet tried,
to
draw these kind of crowds, and I have a feeling she will probably be able to. I have a feeling we are not far away from a massive Hillary Clinton rally, just because
she has
I think
to do something.
She has to, right?
This is the only area in which a candidate like her sort of can, like, compete. Like, she can't really compete with him on the ideas because we know her ideas, right. And he's the one prodding her. She can
compete with him as, like, a behemoth, right. Sort of.
She can,
like,
look successful.
I'm going to have a campaign rally at, you exactly. know, Soldier Field in Chicago but and have 900,000 people at it. She, like, she could do
if
that.
She wants to like, do that, though, like, she derives less benefit from drawing a crowd than he does, so it's right, sort exactly. of a losing game for her.
Right.
Because having 10,000 people at a Bernie Sanders rally sounds like he yeah, fucking got every person in America to vote for him. I mean, that yeah. that's a huge
yeah.
coup for someone like him. For someone like her, we all know she could get a million people to right. go wherever she wants. Like, yeah. it's that's not the sort of issue with us.
Yeah.
The issue is whether she yeah. can get people to the polls and anyone excited about her candidacy,
right.
which is something that... A nobody getting 10,000 people really shows, right,
shows
that
you.
People yeah, are excited.
Exactly.
He also drew 2,500 people in Iowa, and not just in the, like, reasonable person part of Iowa.
That's right.
This is, like, Steve Kingland, Iowa.
Yeah, Council Bluffs, western Iowa, which that's, is not where...
That's not a place.
No, it's not. It's on the... It's borders Nebraska.
Yeah, that should so explain that, everything you need to know about
there
it.
There you go. Done.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's, like, the rural weirdo...
2,500 part. People came to hear a socialist...
speech in Council Bluffs.
On the Nebraska border. Yeah. Okay.
So that's a curious situation, but he's yeah. he got a crowd of 3,000 in Minneapolis, 5,000 in Denver. I mean, these yeah. the Madison rally was by far the largest, but, like, he's getting large crowds.
Yeah.
He is not just speaking to, like, a barbecue
yeah.
in these places. And, you know, I think that he sort of, like I said, is deriving the most benefit from doing this, but I also think that it's a good way for him to kind of, like, spread his message to states that don't yeah. necessarily see themselves as Bernie Sanders territory.
Right.
And then they can be like, wait a minute, we have 5,000 people at a Bernie Sanders rally? There yeah. are 5,000 Bernie Sanders supporters here. Look at yeah. us. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's a good way for him to kind of build a brand in rando places.
Yeah, totally. And it's obvious, whatever he's doing fundraising-wise is totally working, because all the candidates had to announce their fundraising efforts this week because the quarter was over. And he crushed it. No one thought he was going to have this many.
No.
We knew that he had, like, a good... I think they had announced, like, what happened, like, in the first 5 days or something. Remember when...
Right,
they, like,
he had a great first week.
Right, yeah, exactly. But it was a great 2 months.
Yeah.
Because he raised $15 million. Average donation was $33. And they received 400,000 contributions from about 250,000 people.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Almost all... 99% of those donations were $250 or less, which means that he's really sticking to the, like, no big money...
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Path
and,
that he
and
made.
And so... And that was... You know, that's huge because... That is, he did a lot of it online, too. Right. And that is
that's how Obama was initially killing it.
Right, exactly. And he had more donations than Obama did in his first quarter yeah. in 2000. He didn't have as much money, but he had more people give to him.
Yeah. And this yeah. is in, I think that probably people sort of see the urgency in giving to a campaign like this as opposed to giving to a big totally. Corporate campaign because... Yeah. He needs the money.
Yeah.
And you can feel good about having done it because you feel like he really is looking for small donations.
Right.
He's not just sort of, like, humoring you while he gets a zillion dollars from, you know.
Yeah. Well, he can't because he doesn't have a pack to take
right,
the money.
Right, because he doesn't have a pack.
So, right, yeah.
So I feel like there's the potential that he could really, like, maintain this kind of grassroots funding, which not only is, like, a great thing in terms of funding. And I'm sure his operation doesn't need as much money as Hillary's
yeah.
anyway.
Well, it doesn't.
Just because
yeah.
of the way it operates.
Yeah.
But also, these are the kinds of donations that... Because it's so many people, sort of campaign for you.
Well, and I have a feeling,
it sort of
you know,
drives the campaign to have 400,000 people, or to have 250,000 people giving you donations, is that's 250,000 people that are also basically sort of, like, in their real lives campaigning for
well,
you.
Well, right. Well, and the fact that he had 400,000 donations from 250,000 people.
People are donating
I mean,
more than once.
People, I donated more than once.
Yeah, they're monthly
so,
donating.
Yeah. And they're trying to get you to do that, too, because the last time that I donated,
right.
they always, you know.
They asked if you wanted to sign up for monthly
yeah,
donations.
Monthly, of course, yeah. yeah. But, you know, Hillary, of course, she raised $45 million.
And her super PAC raised $15
million. Right, yeah.
But,
so,
I mean, am I
no.
surprised
well,
to hear that Hillary
had,
Clinton is raising $1 billion?
They've changed up some of the heads of the Priorities USA or whatever, because that is, they actually, that's fairly
that's pretty,
anemic.
Yeah.
Because you remember when everybody was talking about how she was, like, going to potentially, by the time the general came around, have raised $2 billion? You remember
yeah.
this? Like,
that's not even
is,
close to being on track.
She's not nowhere near that. So there's been a little bit of a shakeup. I don't think she would need that. That's a
no.
ridiculous number. But and it wasn't her that said that, I don't think. But
no.
Anyway, he has said that he hoped to be able to raise between 40 and 50 million by the time of the first primaries to be able to run. And he's like well he's on
well
his
on
way
the way to that.
To that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to beat that if he can sort of even keep
well,
this
he
remotely
must,
up.
This, first of all, it's cheaper to run an operation that people are excited about because your volunteer labor is a lot more effective when that's
totally.
The case.
Yeah.
So like already his operation is going to be cheaper. He doesn't need to devote as much energy to destroying Hillary Clinton because his insurgency is not based on an attack campaign. It's
right.
based on just his ideas being good.
Right. When he said the article that I read about the speech in Madison, which was almost an hour and a half. He remains long-winded, which I love, obviously.
Right.
He only mentioned her name once,
yeah.
and it was to say, it's not about me, and it's not about her.
Yeah,
like, the only time that he never mentions
to talk
her,
about her.
And she is not mentioning his yet either, because I think that she's still to the point where she feels like she doesn't quite have
she's
to.
She's gonna have
I think
to
She's
soon.
Going to have to at a certain point, yeah.
Well, and she, it's, like, I sort of feel like as soon as she starts talking about him, she's basically just gonna increase his name recognition. Like, it's a losing proposition for her to acknowledge
yeah.
this is happening, because as we've said many times, the thing that is really standing between him being neck and neck with her is
just
name recognition. It's just people not knowing who he is.
Well, and the other thing is she's trying to take so many... She's trying to steal so many
right,
of his policies anyway.
She can't address the fact
that
she stole them from somebody.
Right, she can't badmouth him being a socialist because she's trying
actively,
to act like one
right she's actively trying to steal all of his ideas.
Yeah.
No, it's genius.
Yeah.
Speaking of polling, though...
I mean,
Hillary Clinton... was leading by a pretty large margin the last time we checked in Iowa. We know the New Hampshire polls had gotten very close.
Right, within single digits.
Within single digits.
Yeah.
But in Iowa, we were still, you know, she was at like 60%, he was at 15%. Like,
right.
that was, they were in like two different worlds.
Yeah, there was a Quinnipiac poll from May.
Right.
That was exactly, yeah, exactly. She was ahead 35 points.
Right. She was ahead by 35 points. She's now only ahead by 19 points.
Right.
The
so,
poll, the margin has closed to 52 to 33.
Right, less than 2 months later.
He's doubled his
support. She is now for the first, and he obviously ate into her support too,
right.
because
she went from 60 to 52,
and that's the first time that she's been below 60 since the Quinnipiac poll started
polling
in
this.
Iowa. So that's like, I mean,
that's alarm
the
bell.
The sirens have to be going off.
Yeah. Well, they were. I mean, they've already started sending out their goons to be like,
yeah.
you know. Don't worry if she loses all the primaries. That's she's
yeah,
still a great
right,
candidate
exactly.
if she can't win the primaries. Like,
right.
That's
she's still our best hope.
Right. Such great news. Meanwhile, the union endorsement situation has gotten very complicated because,
yes.
as we know, Sanders is a big labor guy.
Right.
Labor people like Sanders, and
that's right.
he's been a longstanding advocate of, you
yes.
know, a lot of the issues
that's
that unions are there to address. Yeah. So, and then he's the AFL-CIO...
which is one of the biggest labor unions. It might be the biggest.
Well, it's
I'm not
no, it's
sure,
the like affiliate.
Oh, it's the
all
affiliated
the, yeah,
of all
this
of them,
is
right? Yeah, of course.
The
yeah.
So Trumka, who runs the AFL-CIO,
right.
has been sort of like asked repeatedly about what they're going to do about this, and he's kind of trying to like be like, we like Hillary Clinton, but
right.
we're not going to do anything yet because
right.
he's getting a lot of prodding from smaller, like local AFL-CIO organizations
right.
who are. Trying to figure out how they can endorse Sanders without pissing off the bigger AFL-CIO.
Right, and a couple of them have already done it. South Carolina did it. Vermont did it. They passed resolutions, like, at their local level to...
In Iowa.
And they're trying to do it. They
yeah.
want to do it at their, like, August big meeting or July big meeting or something like that. But apparently it's illegal to do that, like, under the bylaws or whatever.
Right.
So Trumka this week had to... issue a statement telling...
Like, being like, stop doing this,
you
guys.
You can't do this. This is illegal
right.
for you to do. Which they all know, but they just don't give a flying fuck.
No. No, and I think... Well, I think they know. This is a lot of the time what ends up happening with the AFL-CIO is they are such a big organization that they have to play the game a little bit. The
right.
local organizations don't give a shit about playing the game. And
yeah.
in this is such a clear
yeah.
situation where Bernie Sanders is really a great labor advocate and has
right.
been his whole career. And Hillary Clinton is really not a great labor advocate and has not been a great labor advocate her whole career.
Yeah.
So there is like a very clear consensus in a lot of these local AFL-CIO chapters that... And in a lot of local union chapters in
right.
general, that there's, like, a clear winner here.
Yeah.
And so what they think will probably
right.
happen is they think that the AFL-CIO will probably not endorse anyone in the primaries, just
yeah.
sort of, like, hoping they can let it play out. Because I think they would piss off too much of their membership if they endorsed Hillary. And
yeah.
it's clear that even the people at the top of the chain who are trying to sort of, like, be like, but Hillary's fine... aren't as excited about her as they are about
right.
Bernie Sanders.
Well, I was going to say, Trumka himself is a huge Bernie guy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what that
no.
isn't doesn't necessarily matter in the scope of sort of like the whole organization.
No, but this is, he's, I think, also of the recent AFL-CIO leadership, sort of the most reasonable guy that's been in that post in the last few decades. And so I think that for him, because he really has done a good job of being an advocate for labor in a way that has sort of, that has stopped this sort of like corporatization of labor.
Yeah.
I think that he's kind of like in an awkward position here.
Yeah, totally.
Because I'm sure that personally he sees what, you know, he sees what's going on. It's not, he's not
a
fool.
He also knows what he's supposed to do.
But he knows what he's supposed to do. Right. He also knows what, in order to stay relevant, the AFL-CIO has to do.
Right.
But there's a point at which Bernie Sanders gets so popular that they don't have to do that anymore.
I agree.
And I'm curious to see whether this will get to that point. Because it sounds like in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's getting to that point.
Yeah.
You know, if Bernie Sanders is polling within single digits of Hillary Clinton, the AFL-CIO doesn't have to play her game anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Suddenly, they, like, at that point, it's a free-for-all.
Yeah.
So, and if, and if unions are behind Bernie, that puts her in a very difficult position because so much of the Democratic fundraising base and the Democratic support base comes out of these unions.
Yeah.
You know, these union endorsements. So
my favorite quote from this whole thing, this was from a Politico article, by the way, because they talked to some of these like state, you know, leaders of these parties or whatever. And they talked to the guy who is the head of the Massachusetts AFL-CIO, and they asked, it's basically, they all sort of acknowledged that they knew that they weren't supposed to be doing this, but just like didn't care or whatever. And so, so this guy who, Stephen Tolman, says that, yes, we know, but he, but then went on to say, Bernie Sanders has spent his life fighting for working people. He's made no secret of it, and he's used it as his mantra, and that's, I respect very much, And then they asked him about Clinton's candidacy, and he says, who? Please. I mean, with all respect, huh? That was his response to whether they would be supporting Hillary Clinton in Massachusetts.
Exactly. This is exactly what's happening. That sums it up.
That's the rift right there.
Yeah. It's, so that's going to be interesting. They, in past years, they have sort of not endorsed anybody just because they weren't sure what to do. But generally, those are races that have been between two, you know, moderate, you know, nobody Democrats. Yeah. You know, when you're talking about trying to endorse someone in the 2004 primaries, it's like...
Right, it was like
John Kerry versus
no one by the time Howard Dean sort of flamed
out. Exactly. And even Howard Dean is not...
was supposed to be
No Bernie Sanders. Right. I mean, you know, they didn't have any candidates in that race who could really point to this kind of record on labor. So, like, this is a very awkward position to be in if you are labor right now.
Right. They sort of... What it seems like they will probably do is just hold off. Because that's even what they did in 2008. Because I think on some level they probably would have gone in for Hillary. Or they might have gone in for our friend John Edwards.
John Edwards. No, I think they probably would have. That one
but,
was just...
You know, he... I think they saw that that was going to be like an insanely close race. And instead of throw their weight behind someone, they waited basically until there was a Democratic nominee.
Yeah.
Like they endorsed Obama when he had the amount of delegates that he necessary that he needed.
And this is, though... This is different because their local chapters are going to keep doing this.
Totally.
Their local chapters are going to continue. And, like what and not just their local chapters, but unions, in individual unions are going to keep doing this. So, like, at a certain point, it's going to be very awkward for them to sort of to claim that they're not partisan or, you know, that they haven't endorsed anybody when their entire local leadership is going to have endorsed somebody.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be an interesting situation.
Yeah.
I'm sort of excited, though, because this is the first time that I really see, like, labor being something that could be, like, a sort of, like, a force for change in recent memory.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, usually, labor is sort of like, they're like the corporations of the Democratic side.
Right.
They, and I don't mean that I think that labor are as evil as corporations, as I'm sure you can imagine, because labor is made up of people and corporations are not people. But they're who drives a lot of our voting and fundraising efforts. And so when, so a lot of the time they just sort of toe the line. And that's because all of our candidates are usually terrible. You know, it's, when you have 700 Bruce Braleys running, it's like, who cares which one of those people becomes the, like, Hillary Clinton is a corporatist. Right. She's no friend to the union. So, like, what? Who cares which Hillary Clinton is elected?
But there is a labor guy.
There is a labor guy in this race who is not just a labor guy, but is a labor guy who is polling real numbers.
Right.
So, like, that's interesting.
He's not a fake labor guy.
He's not a fake labor guy.
Right.
Anyway, I'm very excited about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also excited about the fact that Hillary's people are, like, trying to dig up dirt on Bernie Sanders now because they're kind of panicked.
Right, this is a little conspiracy theory-ish, but...
But I also mean, sort of
who
like...
Who are we to ignore conspiracy theories?
No, not... Nobody. We're not people who would...
Yeah,
we're not people to do that. No, there's some hilarious rumors going around that at the University of Vermont has a library of
Bernie's special collections.
Right. That is papers that are about Bernie Sanders' time as the mayor of Burlington. It's just
like boxes of papers, basically. So you have to go there and you have to sift through them, basically. Exactly. And they've had high interest from everywhere. You know, like the press has been there. I mean, I think they just, you know, the New York Times, I think, just wrote like a very long article, and I think that they had been there. But there are also just some randos coming along.
Randos wearing Jean Shaheen t-shirts. Now, interestingly, if you want to know who absorbed Jean Shaheen's campaign
apparatus in New Hampshire,
it was one Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton
has the Jean Shaheen people currently in her grasp. And mysteriously, Jean Shaheen people are also going to investigate Bernie Sanders of late.
Right. So that's Martin O'Malley has claimed that he doesn't have people there.
Right.
So
also, who is he to be doing opposition research at this moment?
I know.
He doesn't. He needs to do American people research first.
I know.
Find out if anyone's going to vote for him. Slash drop out of the race. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually sort of curious to see where his campaign goes, because I think at some point, like, I feel like we could have a shift in momentum. It's still far enough out that really anything could happen here. Like, I wonder if there's a world where Hillary Clinton ends up in a three-way race for the presidency again that then also ends with her losing out slightly to somebody who has the exact same positions as her.
Well, I read something, actually, and I think it was Doris Kearns Goodwin, actually, because she was comparing this to the 1968 race when Johnson was the he was the incumbent, and then Eugene McCarthy ran against him in the primary.
That was very dramatic.
And then he ultimately pulled out because the first couple primaries were just so close, and there was the Vietnam War going on there or whatever. But he decided not to rerun for president. And she was comparing Bernie Sanders to him in the sense that, like, he may not necessarily win the nomination, but does he do enough damage to her to make it terrifying for everyone that she be the nominee of the party?
Yeah.
Like, are there still sitting ducks, you know, who have entered this race that could be the person in waiting for when she flames out and everyone is too terrified, or he doesn't have the appropriate amount of delegates to become the nominee?
The 1968 Democratic convention was one of the craziest bonkers town conventions in history, because not only did they have this, they had this like weird situation going on for the nominee. They had the Vietnam War, you know, they had anti-war protesters, you know, outside. Like, that was, I mean, 1968 was the craziest year in like political history for many reasons.
Right.
But I mean, that was part of this like huge, crazy election situation.
Yeah, but that was sort of,
and that was part of what spurred it.
It was McCarthy almost beating the incumbent.
Yeah.
In some primaries that actually led Bobby Kennedy to get into the race. And that was, you know, and then another reason why 1968 was crazy, because then he was shot. But, I mean, you know, could there be the Bobby Kennedy of, I don't know who it would be.
No, but I mean, they didn't know who it would be.
They didn't know either.
This is still next year.
I mean, like, that might not be the right answer, but, like, you know.
This is next year.
Maybe it's still Warren. Who knows?
Ooh,
I don't know.
Drama. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
But that's another, I mean, that probably won't happen, but it's fun to think about.
Well, also,
I love to think about all these scenarios.
Also, I feel like once Hillary Clinton's momentum is destroyed, really anyone becomes fair game again. Anyone that she sort of bought off initially. I have a feeling that that Hillary Clinton went to Warren and was like, you know, you will have a position with us, you know, but you just like, you can't destroy us. Don't destroy us.
But if she flames out.
But if she flames out, they might have to go back to Warren and be like, okay, we need a candidate. Like, can you step back into the race? And then we have a race between Liz Warren and Bernie Sanders, and that's confusing for everyone.
Totally.
But I mean, like, this is like at this point, it's early enough that really anything could happen. So I am interested to see where Martin O'Malley's campaign goes.
Yeah.
Just because I think he might accidentally be there at a time. Like, I think he's sort of relying on that even. I think that his plan really is to just sort of accidentally be there in case shit falls apart.
It might be.
In case, so that we don't have to look around and be like, Jim Webb?
People have had
Lincoln
worse plans.
Chafee?
I know.
Those are our options. Like, I mean, that's what I think. People have had worse plans. Yeah. He's just sort of like, he's like drafting Hillary Clinton.
Totally. That's exactly what he's doing.
That's what he's doing. Uh-huh. In any case, speaking
this
of Hillary Clinton.
Was my favorite.
The tragedy of Hillary Clinton,
by the way,
deepens every moment.
I mean, this really, truly, it didn't make me sad. It kind of made me sad.
It made me a little sad.
It also was like one of those moments. I felt a little
bad for Hillary Clinton.
It was one of those moments where you felt like, oh my God, working at the State Department is just like working at the small business that I work at, exactly. Basically. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh, they can't work the fax machine either. But anyway, we had the latest email dump of all of
filled
the...
with hilarious Veep-style office.
It was all, most of it was out of Veep. Like, I mean, unquestionably.
Like, there's one email that's just Hillary Clinton sending an email to one of her staffers that says, with just the subject line, please call Sarah and ask her if she can get me some iced tea. And that's the least salacious of them, obviously, but that's hilarious.
Yeah, that's good.
They have to go through three people to get iced tea.
Yeah.
But also, there's like a lot of really sad emails about how Hillary Clinton can't figure out how to get invited to the cabinet
meeting. The best one is she sent an email. I heard on the radio that there's a cabinet meeting this morning. Is there? Can I go?
If not, who are we sending? Poor Hillary. And there's like repeated examples of emails where she shows up for meetings and they've been canceled.
That have been canceled. She was like, this is the second time this has happened. What's going on? And then like six question marks.
Oh. They can't figure out how to use the phones. There's like a hilarious exchange between her and Huma Abedin that's just like, you know, it starts with her being like, can you hang up, or with Huma being like, can you hang up the fax line? They're going to call again and try to fax. And then Hillary's like, I thought it was supposed to be off the hook. And then Huma's like, we have to reestablish a line. Try it one more time. And then she's like, I did. It's like a whole exchange about how they can't operate the fax machine. There's a hilarious series of emails about Twittering.
Oh, this is including, by the way.
Straight out of 2009.
Including her social media person, right, by the way.
Who also is incorrectly using the word Twittering instead of tweeting. it begins with an exchange that's...
It's a long exchange.
It's a long exchange that we're going to read to you.
Yeah.
So here's... Hi, Cheryl. I do not believe there is Twittering in the secretary's name. The Twittering is from Dipnote, the State Department's blog. It will occasionally quote the secretary, but the Twittering should not be done in her name. Because an email had been sent that said, not sure who's Twittering at DOS, but we should not be Twittering in the secretary's name since she's not the person actually Twittering. There is reference in Newsweek to her Twittering and says, Hillary Clinton style, dry info and offers 4,788 followers. Can you advise who is Twittering in her name and how we can address... Like, why she had to use the word Twittering like five times in that email is a mystery. So then there's like
Everybody got in on the...
You know, people are talking... People are looking at the Newsweek piece and trying to figure out how to scan it to each other and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Finally, they get an email. Our Twittering guy confirmed that we don't tweet directly from HRC. The closest we come is to send out quotes from her official statements using the format Secretary Clinton, we will work with the Goldman, blah, blah, blah. So they finally get to the bottom of it, but every single person in the exchange repeatedly uses the word Twittering like 1,000 times.
So many times.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
There's also one about her asking to borrow a book about how to email better.
Yeah, that's right.
There's also, this is interesting because the White House claimed that they didn't know about this private email server and private email address, the White House had been emailing her at it.
Well, that was the other thing that came out of this dump.
Which was the sort of actual news item that came out of this.
Because, like, Rahm Emanuel had asked for her email address, and then there's, like, some... exchange between like Hillary and like David Axelrod had asked for it. So like all of these people have been on record saying that they did not know that she was using this email address. And it's sort of this latest batch became clear that it did.
100% clear that.
But that's,
I mean,
that wasn't what was interesting.
No.
It was her not knowing how to use the fax machine. That's
right.
What was
her not knowing how to, when the cabinet meetings were scheduled for. No one telling her when the cabinet was meeting is, I think, the saddest and most hilarious part of this entire exchange.
Yeah.
And a lot of Twittering going on. A lot of Twittering.
Yeah.
I hope by now, P.S., that the State Department is familiar with Twitter lingo.
I don't know. I'm not convinced.
That was worrisome.
Yeah.
Like, I get, all right, Hillary Clinton and her older staff maybe aren't up on the lingo.
No, but somebody has
to. The social media guy should have corrected them at some point. Come on.
Yeah. He probably just
sighed
to himself and then just...
This is pre-Obamacare website government, though.
That's true. Yes.
So I'm not convinced that they did know what they were doing, that anyone there was in charge.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jim Webb announced. I had been convinced this whole time, by the way, that he had already announced.
Oh, no.
Because we knew he was going to announce. We've known for months. And so I had just, in my mind, decided he had announced. Yeah. I've been talking about him like he'd announced for months now.
Well.
No one corrected me.
Well, you hadn't. He hadn't.
No one knows who he is. That's why.
Right. And he hadn't published this 2,000 word blog entry, which is how he announced.
Yes.
That's all you need to know about
his real
candidacy,
personality, actually. That guy.
That's right. Yes.
A real Republican personality.
That's right.
Another former Republican.
Yeah, he's a Reagan guy.
He's
the Secretary of the Navy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, as we were thought crimed by Meet the Press, and we'll remind you of all of the people currently in the Democratic race, only Martin O'Malley has been a Democrat his whole life.
For all his life. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's, we've got everyone, really. We've got two actual Republicans. We've got Hillary Clinton, who was a Goldwater girl. We've got a socialist in the race. We're really, we could just run this as the general.
Totally. Like,
I mean, the clown car on the right certainly doesn't have anyone worth electing.
No.
But I think Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb would be reasonable Republican candidates.
Yeah, totally.
So I feel like,
they would be.
Let's just go straight to the general with these guys.
I mean, Jim Webb is like,
is it 100% a not interesting nobody?
He's a not
interesting nobody. A Confederate flag
nobody.
Apologist, P.S.
Just recently. Was like talking about how, you know, it was such a great historical thing and doesn't understand why we should have to take it down and blend. Obviously paraphrasing. But I mean, he did. He was like, everybody was like, what are you saying, Jim Webb? Yeah. Like, stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that case, and in any, and in most important news though, Chris Christie, as we said, he would.
In it.
Announced on Tuesday.
Bringing his, telling it. He's going to tell it like it is.
That's right.
He's going to bring the straight talk.
Candidate on the Republican ticket to announce.
That's right.
We had a very difficult time naming all 14
but
earlier, but we did it.
That's right.
Because we're people that can do it. Should we do it?
Oh, God. No.
Pressure.
I'm too scared.
No, we're going to do it.
All right, great. Okay.
We're going to start with Florida again.
Right.
We have
Jeb and Marco Rubio.
Yes. We have Ted Cruz, Rand Paul from Texas.
Well, Rand Paul's actually from, well, he's from Texas.
He's from Kentucky, right.
But we can count him. He's a Texas person.
It's how Jeb Bush gets me to Texas.
Yes.
And then Rand Paul, I include in the Texas.
I'm fine doing that.
And then Bobby Jindal is how I get back around in the South.
Yeah, but we missed Rick Perry from Texas.
That's the other person we kept missing him.
Yeah. And Bobby Jindal.
And Bobby, okay. Yeah, so we're up to six.
Yeah.
And then we have the Huckabee Santorum duo.
Ben Carson.
We have the Ben Carson trio.
That's like a trifecta.
That's a trifecta. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have Carly Fiorina.
Carly.
We have the nobodies. We have Pataki.
Trump is not a nobody, but he's
also kind of a nobody.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna miss one. We always miss one.
Shit.
We have Chris Christie.
Yeah,
And then there's one other person
who's not gonna be president.
Right. Just one of the many.
Yeah.
One of the many who's not gonna be president. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's really hard to name all of them.
It's probably an obvious person too.
Yeah. Probably. We forgot to name somebody from an obvious.
And we. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But. When all is said and done, we are going to have 16 people. If we include everyone who is planning to announce officially and has announced, we're going to have 16 people in this race.
Right, because we're up to 14, but Walker has not officially announced, and John Kasich is going to announce yet. Right.
So, this is wild times, guys. Yep. Wild, wild times.
But it'll be interesting to see how, I mean, I don't think Christie has, there is a place for him. Certainly.
It's the Rudy Giuliani place.
And definitely with this many of them, even though he's not polling that great now, I think that once he sort of starts campaigning, he seems to, like, know that he's going to have to, like, ride this, you know, straight shooter thing. Like, he's not going to shy away from that and try and change.
Well, he shouldn't. They're all bloviating idiots.
That's exactly. I was going to use the word bloviating.
I know. We saw it earlier. That's why. Oh, we're not people who normally use the word bloviating.
No,
but today.
It's a good word.
It's the word that describes the Republican field.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfectly.
So we'll see how he does. I mean, he's polling at like 5% now.
His problem is that he's got lots of problems. Well, right. His problem to begin with, his current problem is that he's not loved in his state.
Correct.
His second current problem is that Bridgegate details are about to emerge that we didn't already know. And that's.
And there's still a lot of animosity against him for his, you know, nice words about the president right before the election when everyone thought that he should have been hanging out with Mitt Romney after Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
So he's got a base problem. That's its own issue. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why Chris Christie is not going to be the president. Most importantly, that he's a rude asshole.
Right.
But I'm excited to welcome 14th person to the race.
Mm-hmm.
You and 12 other people plus one person we can't remember are going to be very happy together, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
It's getting to the point where we can't name all the candidates. And we know all the candidates.
Yeah, we know them all.
We've announced every single one of them, but we just can't name all of them because it's too hard.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham! Did it. I was like, I know it's somebody.
Because we forgot him earlier,
too. I know it's somebody who's 1,000 years old.
That also
and
tells
not going to win.
Yeah, that tells you about the Lindsey Graham candidacy right there. When you're the person that, when everyone is listing the candidates, can't remember to list on multiple
Lindsey
occasions.
Lindsey Graham is the Nebraska of listing states. You know, like when you're trying to list all 50 states and you're like, what's the
you're
one that I'm forgetting?
Order,
and like, it's always like Wyoming or Nebraska or something like that.
Yeah.
He's
Lindsey Graham.
He's the Wyoming or the Nebraska of the presidential Republican field.
Yeah. But before we leave Chris Christie really quickly, he's got a great super PAC name.
Right, we posted this earlier, but we're going to say it again.
Yeah, it's leadershipmattersforamerica.org, which is LMFAO. So good.
Tells you exactly what you should do when you hear anything about Chris Christie
running
for president.
Yeah,
bingo. Also, with this many people in the field, the new drama that's about to emerge is who is going to be in the debates.
I'm obsessed with this story.
I mean, this is the greatest story in the
history. It's so good.
It's so good. Because there's only 10 spots in the debates.
That's right.
A lesson learned from past experience when even 10 people is too many people in the debate.
You can't debate anything in 10 people.
Also, you can't... 10 of these people is different than debating with 10 reasonable people. Like, you really can't debate with 10 of these people.
Yeah.
In any case, the organizers that we're going to have to figure out which polls to use to determine that who the top 10 are, because everyone is polling at like 8%, 9%, 7%.
Nobody has more than 14%.
More than 14% basically. Anywhere.
Right.
And they're all polling the exact same numbers, and they're all within the margin of error, so nobody knows who's leading.
Right, exactly. And there's so many, you know, as it gets closer, everybody is now, there's like some drama with like what the methodology is going to be. Like, are you going to do likely primary voters or just Republicans? Because they're using national polls for
this.
So, you know, or is it, you know...
People who lean Republican.
Lean Republican.
Now, one thing we know about the Republicans is that they have real issues with polls.
That's true.
Running polls, knowing which polls to believe, understanding poll methodology. Like, one of the things that we learned when Mitt Romney thought that he was going to be the president and then was surprised, like everyone else, to find out that he wasn't.
Right. It's not even that they don't know how to poll. It's that they don't know how to read polls that exist.
They don't act... they don't know how to believe polls that are telling the
truth. Exactly, right.
They don't know how to believe truthful polls, and they do know how to believe non-truthful polls.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
There's going to be a lot of contention within the Republican field about which polls to trust because they can't be trusted to know.
Right, and especially at... So what they're going to do, I think, is they're going to they're supposedly taking five, and then I think averaging them or something like that. But like...
Depending on which five they take,
who this is going to affect is obviously the people who are sort of like at the cutoff point. Because like, just for example, Carly Fiorina, depending on what... You could get five polls where she is in either 8th or 12th place.
Right.
So like, it's going to depend for her... Totally.
And by the time these polls are taken, she's probably going to be ranging from 7th to 16th place.
Right. It's going
to
be totally arbitrary where she ends up with whatever polls
they pick. Aside from Jeb Bush and maybe Chris Christie at this moment.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, a couple, like maybe like Ted Cruz, Scott Walker type people.
Right.
Maybe not even Ted Cruz though. Like you're going to, like literally 10 of these people are going to be in the mix to be cut off.
And
arbitrarily.
And 8 to 14 is a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Really, 7 to 14 is a crapshoot.
Yeah. So. No, it's going to be exciting.
And it's also the other thing that is interesting is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and we're going to get to that pretty soon, about, you know, Donald Trump this week and whether he is actually hurting the party. Obviously, he has a place where he can sort of like speak to the base when he talks about Mexican rapists.
There are people out there hoping to hear that from him.
Who are wanting to hear that. Right, exactly. But is that bringing down the whole party enough that there are polls that don't have him in the top 10?
Right.
There are also polls that have him like in second. So that's curious.
It's a mystery.
But do they lean heavily on the polls that don't have him in the top 10 only to not have him there just because the Republican Party bigwigs are going to be like, do not have Donald Trump on a stage with these
people. Do they pick the polls that keep the crazies out?
Right.
Do they know which ones the crazies are?
No.
That's a concern that I have for them. Yeah. I feel like there might be... First of all, there's more than...
Than Donald Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump
crazies.
Like, there's more than six crazies in this race already. And you're about to have one announced. So like, there's going to have to be some crazies.
Yeah.
You know? Even if you were able to keep out Mike Huckabee, Bobby Jindal, Donald Trump, and like, any of the
Rick Santorum,
Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina...
Yeah.
Then, you know, you still have Ted Cruz in your debate. Like, there's no...
You can't keep them all out.
You can't keep them all out.
Once there's 10, you're going to have at least 5 of them be crazy.
Like,
people.
You're going to have Ted Cruz and Chris Christie in your debate, and that's going to be a problem for you. So, like, this is going to be these are going to be some of the greatest debates in American history. In terms of debating method or debating the topicality of the debates. Just in terms of pure theater.
Yeah.
This is going to be as wonderful as the 2008 debates were. I mean, the 2012 debates were.
Yeah.
And possibly even more wonderful because there were not even this many people running time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a dream.
Yeah.
And there's a candidates forum for the bottom five.
Yes.
Bottom
That's
six.
What I was said. So, I was like, I want to see the
candidates forum is going to be amazing.
Like, the backdraw.
Yeah.
Basically.
Can you I mean, that's going to be a candidates forum with all of the greatest candidates that you could ever want
in losers.
One forum.
The loser candidates.
The loser candidates. Mm-hmm. It's gonna, I watching Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and Bobby Jindal just like really get into it is going to really be a dream come true.
I agree.
In any case, speaking of bloviating idiots.
Oh boy. Like the king of the bloviating idiots.
Right. And Donald Trump obviously is the bloviating idiot we're talking about. He's had not a good week.
Not
After
even close.
Announcing that he was going to run for president, he's basically lost all of the things that have made him famous enough to run for president in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, as Gawker put it, even the network responsible for the TV show Outsourced, one of the most offensive TV shows to come down the pike in decades, was uncomfortable remaining associated with Trump after his announcement, after he was so, like, openly and horribly racist in his announcement.
Yeah.
So here's a list of people, compiled by Gawker, that are just walking away from the Trump, from being associated with him in any way. Univision obviously decided not to air Miss USA.
Right. They, he's going to sue them.
He's going to sue them. They're kind of like, fuck yourself. Four of the Miss USA co-hosts, Rosalind Sanchez, Christian De La Fuente, Thomas Roberts, and Cheryl Burke, have all decided they're not going to participate.
Sure, sure.
Two judges, Jonathan Scott and Emmett Smith. Three performers, Natalie De La Rose, Flo Rida, and Craig Wayne Boyd, and one other that I can't remember the name of because it was someone I'd never heard of.
Yeah, sure.
One Miss USA sponsor, Farouk Systems. Mm-hmm. NBC Universal has decided to cancel Miss USA, so all of these people don't need to be involved anymore because the fact that they all made this announcement is irrelevant because NBC is no longer showing, and they've canceled The Apprentice, and they basically were like, we're no longer associated with Donald Trump.
Right.
And his response is, they'll stand behind lying Brian Williams, but won't stand behind people that tell it like it is, as unpleasant as that may be. I think he should take this as a sign that they were even willing to stand behind Brian Williams and still cannot even have The Apprentice on their air anymore.
I know.
These are not people that are too proud to have The Apprentice on the air.
That's right.
These are people that are too annoyed with him to have The Apprentice on the air.
Yeah.
Televisa, which is a Mexican broadcaster, has gotten out of the game. A brand that he was associated with, Kraft 5 Rabbit Cerveceria.
Yeah.
No longer associated. Studio Aura TV, no longer associated. Macy's, that was selling a Donald Trump, you know, men's collection.
Yeah.
Was sort of like, go fuck yourself. City of New York is sort of like actively trying to think of how they can get away from the Donald Trump experience.
Right, they're reviewing contracts.
They're reviewing city contracts with him.
Yeah.
De Blasio is like having none of this.
Yeah.
The Costa Rican TV network, Teletica. Most importantly, Trump home mattress maker, Serta.
Oh,
that's
boy.
When you know.
That's right.
Rush Limbaugh. Learned that the hard way.
Week one.
You try to call birth control users of sluts, and what you end up with is no more, is Sleep Number no longer wanting to be your sponsor.
That's right.
The mattress companies are usually ahead of the curve on these issues.
They are.
Once you know, once they're, first of all, are they sponsoring everything in America?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
How many people are buying mattresses? But most interestingly, I think.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Camping World, which is a NASCAR sponsor, sent this letter out where they were basically like, we they had a contract with Trump. We no longer are going to throw our events at Trump. The Trump National Doral in Miami, It's a space
golf
that
course,
he, a golf course that he owns.
Yeah.
And they then encouraged NASCAR to do the same thing, and NASCAR did.
Did.
So NASCAR has canceled an event at one of Trump's properties.
Right. You can't be too racist for NASCAR.
That's hard, guys. You have to really be scraping the bottom of the barrel to get too racist for NASCAR.
That's right.
There's not a single non-redneck involved in their sport at all.
No, exactly. And one thing that I think is important to note here, and I did not even myself realize this, is that, I think just sort of like being disconnected from, I mean, we obviously know the story is going on, but they were talking about this on Meet the Press, and they like showed some clips or whatever. Like, this is 24/7 what everyone is talking about on every American Spanish language television network.
Yes.
No one, since he said this, whatever it was, a week or two ago, no one has talked about anything else other than their hatred of Donald Trump.
No, it's...
And that is why all the Republicans are freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because it's taken up all the airspace every Spanish speaker in America.
This is an electorate that they have to start winning in order to stay relevant at all.
Right.
There are all these states that are strongholds for them now that are about to turn.
Yeah.
And they know this, and they've been trying to figure out what to do about this for years.
Right, and this is not
They've been
not
desperate
helping,
to figure it out. They've been cultivating Latino talent because of this.
Right.
They've been doing everything they can to figure out how to both hate immigrants and not, you know,
right.
not piss off all Latino voters.
Right. Well, they sort of compared him to doing the same thing for... Could he be doing the same thing for this race that... what the hell... What's his name in Missouri? Todd Akin did
for women.
For all of the Republicans who had like said terrible things about women, we then had to sort of like
remember
that Republicans hate women.
Yeah,
this is sort of causing us to re-remember that all the Republicans hate Mexicans.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, this is such bad timing for them. This is such bad news for them. And I think he's sort of in a bubble and doesn't realize
he
the degree to which this is the key to them staying relevant for the next few decades.
He's standing by the statement. He hasn't apologized.
Just be like, I'm sorry. It was an overstatement. You got what I meant.
Yeah.
Just say something dumb. And then, like, it's crazy to me that he won't back away from this.
No, he's like doubled down
on it. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it boggles the mind.
Yeah, it really does.
And I think that he's maybe being a little naive about how bad this bodes for him in certain parts of the country, not just in terms of how the press, you know, in the Spanish-speaking press, you know, there are states where this is going to be an issue.
Yeah.
It's going to be an issue here. It's going to be an issue
totally.
In New Mexico and Arizona.
Totally.
It's going to be an issue in Texas, and they do not want to make an issue out of Texas.
I know,
there's
right?
like a million electoral votes in Texas. Like, why? Like, Texas is like 500% Mexican. And like, there's like 1 trillion electoral votes there. Like, why would they think that this was... they've been figuring out how to walk around this issue for years.
But Ted Cruz is from Texas, and he doesn't seem to care.
He doesn't give a shit. Yeah, because Ted Cruz is Cuban. And we're about to learn, Ted Cruz is the kind of Cuban that left Cuba because his father was captured by Batista, the U.S.-installed dictator that Fidel overthrew.
Oh, yeah, that's why his father left,
That's why his father left. Yeah. He didn't leave because of communism.
No.
His father left because it wasn't communist enough. So, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But in any case, the one person who doesn't hate Donald Trump is Mr. Ted Cruz.
Right, because
Ted Cruz.
The Republicans, you know, most of them have really come out strongly against this. Like, Jeb Bush has,
said it's not trying to have anything to do with this.
Most of them have come out with strong statements. Like, this is not what the Republican Party is. Yes, it is.
It is.
By the way.
But
yeah.
They've been trying to think of a different way. This is what... It's always been this, but they've been trying for years to think of a different way of saying it, so it doesn't sound like
is
what it is.
Yeah.
And now they thought that they were going to be able to sort of like not talk about it because they were going to get everyone on lifestyle issues, and those are starting to get settled in a way that's making it very difficult for them to just like come out strong on hating gay people and hoping that Catholics will be with them and that's how they'll get Mexicans, you know, voters to vote for them. Like, that's not what is going to happen here.
No.
In any case, Ted Cruz was on Meet the Press and stood up for Donald Trump. Saying, I salute Donald Trump for focusing on the need to address illegal immigration. The Washington cartel, not an accidental choice of words.
Oh, he said, I watched this episode. This is on Meet the Press. He said Washington cartel like 17
times. So 17
times,
Washington cartel doesn't want to address that. The Washington cartel doesn't believe we need to secure the borders. The Washington cartel supports amnesty, and I think amnesty is wrong, and I salute Donald Trump for focusing on it. He has a colorful way of speaking. It's not the way I speak, but I'm not going to engage in the media's game of throwing rocks at attacking Republicans. I'm just not going to do it.
Okay.
Also says, I like Donald Trump. He's bold and brash, and I get that it seems like the favorite support of the American media is to encourage some Republicans to attack other Republicans. I ain't gonna do it. I'm not interested in Republican-on-Republican violence.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the famous Republican-on-Republican violence.
Violence.
He's gonna have to get familiar with that if he wants to be in this race at all.
I know.
Like, they're not gonna all be able to complement each other into the lead.
I was gonna say, he's in favor of it. He's
in favor of all kinds of violence. All of them are in favor of all the violence.
They're
in favor of gun violence.
Certainly gun violence.
They're in favor of Republican on Republican violence, which is often what gun violence winds up being. So,
exactly.
I refuse to believe this is the case. But also, Ted Cruz is releasing his election biography. You know, they all write a book.
Mm-hmm.
All the fascinating.
Yeah, his just came out.
Just came out.
Yeah.
And so we're reminded of the story that we were reminded of in March, when we learned that his father's escape from Cuba was not to escape communism, but was to escape. He fought in the Cuban Revolution and was captured and tortured in jail, but not by the communists.
Right.
By Batista, the dictator that the U.S. installed that Fidel overthrew.
Yeah.
So whatever he's up to right now, which is up to a lot of shenanigans, as we know, he went and spoke at one of those CPAC or one of those like Republican events in Ted Cruz's stead.
Right.
But
while Ted Cruz was busy shutting down the government or something like
that. Yeah, I know that's. but one thing that we do know is that he was once involved in a nationalist revolution, and it was not in favor. It was not a corporate.
Right.
It was not a corporate aligned.
I like that.
In any case.
Oh boy.
This is the greatest story of the week, P.S.
Oh, gosh. Bobby Jindal, in the race.
In the race and already killing it.
Right. He took to Twitter, where his super PAC posted that they were going to... he was going to be answering questions at a town hall event asked on Twitter with the hashtag AskBobby. So,
did we talk about his campaign logo, by the way?
Oh, no.
The tanned, rested, ready to go?
Yeah. No, we didn't talk about
that. But that was another important news event of the last week. I thought it was a joke. I don't think it's a joke.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
I don't think it's his... I think he's, like, got merchandise and things with
that. Right, it's
and,
one like, of his, like, merchandising
It's
logos.
Not, like, his
His, like,
actual,
official campaign logo.
Regardless, it's not
important.
Ridiculous.
Not What's important. Important is that it reads, tanned, rested, ready to go.
Yeah.
Tanned, referring to the color of his skin.
To the fact that
he's an Indian. Yeah, he's Indian.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like that. They do mean tanned that way.
Yeah.
They didn't mean tanned in a way that you didn't, or like tanner.
No.
Like the historic.
Right. Or you've.
Where
yeah.
You, what do tanners
tanned
do?
Tanned a hide or something.
Right.
You know?
They have
right.
to. They yeah. use animal skins or something.
Yeah,
I don't
they make
know.
Leather.
They make leather. Yeah. Tanneries. Right. Tanneries. Tanners. They make leather. In any case.
Yeah.
He went to this town hall, received a number of interesting questions that are among many of the questions Brent and I have had.
So many good ones. Yeah,
I mean,
Twitter.
Twitter's been killing it recently.
So good. They're really getting it right, and they got it right
here. We're talking about Twitter like it's a person.
I know.
Twitter has finally gotten it right.
I know.
No, here are some of the questions that he got asked. How does it feel to sell your soul for political gain and yet not gain anything politically?
Yes.
If you're not a scientist when it comes to global warming, how are you a doctor when it comes to women's reproductive systems?
That's
a question that should be asked of most Republican
nominees. When did God create the dinosaurs?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time deciding which SCOTUS rulings I should ignore / selectively be outraged by. Can you help?
That's perfect. That's so good. If I sail too far, will I fall off the edge of the earth? So good.
If you're going to spend 5 days a week in Iowa, can we put the governor's mansion on Airbnb and make up some of the deficit you've created?
Ooh, snap. Which Spice Girl is your favorite? And if you had a chance, what laws would you pass to oppress them for having a uterus?
What's your all-time favorite exorcism? Why?
Yes. I'm glad that Twitter knew that. Twitter, the person, knew about the exorcism. And last, how long did it take Jesus to write the Constitution?
Like, Twitter, between... the Rachel Dolezal situation, and and there was another Twitter hashtag thing where some candidate
just
got
getting it right.
It was the E.L. James Twitter. Did you see that?
No.
You know, there's the new
the new
50 Shades of Grey book.
Yeah,
told from the Christian Grey
perspective. Yeah.
And so she did like a Twitter Q&A,
and
there were so many hilarious questions.
Oh, that's good.
Because it was all sort of like weirdly misogynistic fantasy nonsense.
Yeah.
And so she got exactly what was coming. But, like, it was hilarious. So, in any case, Twitter's really been doing a lot of work recently.
I like
really.
It. Good for them.
Yeah.
Or him. Or her.
Good for him. Or her. Yeah. Good for her.
Yeah. Oh, boy. June jobs numbers.
Ooh, it was jobs
Another
numbers.
Another mixed bag.
What Another an exciting thing to
mixed
think about.
Fake bag. Yes.
Yeah.
We added 223,000 jobs.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. but we also decided that we had 60,000 less jobs in the last 2 months.
Right.
We revised that. So the 223 could be 300 or 100
or 7 or 1,000.
Yeah. But unemployment rate fell to 5.3% from 5.5%, but mostly because people, again, are still
dropping out of the labor force.
We're like, it's like the most... people like not looking for work that we've had, I think, since like the 70s or the 60s or something.
Well, it's
like
just
that.
Gotten, but, like, if you haven't gotten a job yet, it's gotten too depressing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been like 8 years.
Yeah.
So if we all just stop looking for jobs, maybe we reach full employment.
That's what I, that was, yeah, that was my main takeaway from this, because the unemployment rate is really just like taking a dive recently.
Right, and yeah,
it looks really great. Good on paper.
Right.
Right? Oh, yeah, look, the unemployment rate went down, you know, to 5.3%.
But that's because we're calling it the unemployment rate, and it's not actually the rate of unemployed people.
Right.
It is the rate of people who are currently looking for work and not yet employed.
Right.
It doesn't include people that aren't looking for work,
who
gave up because they haven't found work in 8 years, and they're sick of it.
Right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
We might have an unemployment rate of 500% for all we know.
Yeah.
We don't know anything.
Yeah. But there were other hourly pay was flat.
We had estimated everything down. The percentage of Americans looking, working or looking for work fell to a 38-year
low. Yeah, right.
So that was not just people dropping out of the labor force. It's gotten drastic, the number of people that have dropped out of the labor force. Also, none of these numbers are right, so
That's right.
So don't worry about it.
Nope.
It's nothing to worry about here.
Next.
meanwhile, though, some exciting news. The White House is about to release a rule. On Tuesday, they're going to release the details. On Thursday, they're going to actually release the rule.
Yeah.
That would basically, it's going to more than double the minimum salary at which you have to be paying someone, or the minimum salary at which you have to be paying overtime for more than 40 hours of work.
So right now, it's at $23,660, right. And it's been that way for
ages.
You're
not required
to
pay overtime to anyone who makes more than that for working more than 40 hours a week.
Right.
Which is banana pants
crazy. Yeah, because no one is salaried at $23,000.
No.
Like, that's not a thing.
This is
needed change.
Yeah, now that number is $50,440.
Yeah.
$50,440.
Yeah.
Which is going to at least sort of reach a little farther into the middle class.
Yeah.
And it's going to be permanently linked to the 40th percentile of income. So it'll sort of like go up and down with, you know, but it's not going to be marked with specific, you know, wage increases over time, which lefties and other
wanted it to be.
Progressives were sort of upset about that. But it at least sets it at a level more similar to the level it was at when FDR made the rule in the first place. So it's a little bit more in line with what it's supposed to be doing. It's probably going to be challenged in court. The reason that they're releasing it now is they're expecting it to be challenged in court and want to make sure that it's actually that it's gone through the court system and is done by the time
he's still in office. Yeah.
So nobody on the left is super happy. They wanted to see, you know, there's so many issues this doesn't address, because obviously, and the administration has even admitted this, places are just going to stop allowing you to work more than 40 hours a week.
Right.
If this is the case. However, they've said, A, that will mean that they'll have to hire someone new to make up for the next, you know, the sort of overflow. So it might spur some job growth.
Yeah.
And it also just sets a better precedent.
I
mean, that's kind of what you need. But obviously, it doesn't, like, raise the minimum wage or anything. So, like, that's not anything great. But I'm excited to see that he's getting involved in some rulemaking excitement before he leaves office.
Totally.
This is what you're supposed to do as a lame
duck. Yeah, right,
exactly. You're supposed to just get out there and... annoyingly, this overtime rule does not affect, like, teachers or judges or, like, a bunch of other, like, public employees.
Yeah.
I would think in the case of teachers, like...
That's
they
the
work
one that
crazy
most
hours.
Annoyed me. Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
So
maybe
annoying.
That's
maybe that's why. That's why.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You can't pay them for working 24 hours a day.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
But in any case... He's also issuing, he's reviewing clemency requests for nonviolent drug offenders.
And this has been, getting pressed to do this for a long time by all of the people who are sort of, you know, really looking for.
We're paying like $1 trillion a year, I made that number up, to house a bunch of nonviolent drug offenders who probably shouldn't be in jail, because if they had like jobs and a life, they wouldn't have to be drug offenders.
Exactly. Well, and that's what they're basically sort of trying to correct. You know, overreach from when we were sort of panicking
about
when we were
passing all those three strike laws and all these other crazy war on drugs laws.
Uh-huh.
We ended up with New York State had the Rockefeller drug laws. There were even states that had done this. Like, we were just like incarcerating every person who was caught with like a tiny amount of marijuana.
And now you can have it legally anyway, so it doesn't make sense for them
to be in jail anyway. Well, and it's also it's a huge burden on taxpayers. It obviously affects minority men more than anyone else, and so it's an unfair burden on minority men, because they make up most of the drug offenders, even though they're not making up most of the drug users.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was obviously applied unfairly, as you would expect it to be. And so it's just these have been slowly sort of like trickling in, and he's been slowly thinking about dealing with them, but he's finally
taking the process to find these people who have...
Yeah, they're not trickling in, but they are trickling out.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
But he's expected to, he's about to commute a bunch of sentences. He's expected to continue doing this. So hopefully we can correct some of the, but there's like so many people in jail for this stuff.
Oh my gosh, I know.
It's like, crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. He's like not why do we need to have some, like, putting all these people in jail just creates further problems for them. To, like, it makes it harder for them to get their life back. So it's just, like, ends up hurting us anyway.
Yeah.
So then we end up with a bunch of people who have to be criminals because, like, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
Just going to hang out after being in jail and, like, get a good job and, like, become lawyers? Like, that's not how it works.
No.
In any case, SCOTUS update. More SCOTUS things happened.
Right. A couple more big rulings this week.
SCOTUS things. I call it, instead of rulings, I just went with SCOTUS things.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Couldn't remember the word ruling, apparently.
Yeah, fine. Whatever.
An interesting one. Arizona had, Arizona voters had decided in a referendum thing, that they, I just like don't know any words anymore. Arizona voters had decided that they were going to take redistricting away from their state legislature to make it nonpartisan.
Right.
And the state legislature sued the Arizona, you know, voters basically.
Right.
Because, or the Arizona, you know, they created the Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission. They sued that body, but that was basically suing the voters because it says somewhere in the Constitution that, like, legislative bodies get to decide the districts.
Right.
And so the court was basically asked to define what that meant in that context.
What legislature meant.
Yeah. And they defined it as the people instead of defining it as the people who have been elected, which was great news because, and California has an Independent Redistricting Commission as well, so this was good news for us as well. But it means that this sort of like apparatus for people to protect the redistricting process from partisanship has been kind of like reaffirmed, and it means that it's like protected so that other states can do it too. Because this was going to be very concerning because there's not a legislature on earth that has successfully redistricted in a nonpartisan way.
No.
It's just not happening out there.
No.
You can't redistrict your own interests and think that it's going to happen in a part, you know, these are people whose jobs it is to get elected. Yep. Like, and they were going to set the district so that they didn't get reelected.
That's
like, that's not real life.
No, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
So the court's ruling is interesting because A, it affirms that the Constitution can sort of like accept methods of democratic participation that are, that were not in existence at the time that it was written, that it's sort of like expansive enough to sort of protect any kind of direct, you know, participation. It means that they have affirmed that gerrymandering is not a good thing.
Hell.
Because not all courts have done, I mean, courts have been affirming that for a while, but like no one's done anything about it. Yeah. So like, and I wouldn't be beyond this court to not confirm, not affirm that.
No.
And then also it sort of affirms that when the Constitution is generally applying to like everybody, when it says we the people, it's not just our elected officials that are like bound by, or that have the powers.
The powers.
You know,
right.
Legislated or given to them by the Constitution.
Like, I like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
Because ultimately legislators can go bad and we can want to get rid of them. And we, the people, need to have a way of doing that. And if we are not the ones actually in charge, then like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and
we're
of
not
course,
living in a democracy.
Of course, you know, obviously both parties gerrymander as much as they possibly can get away with.
That's...
So this will be a sort of evening of the playing field, but certainly recently the Republicans have been up to it more because they're in control of more state legislatures than the Democrats are. So, and that is ultimately why we sort of have a permanent Republican House of Representatives. Yeah. And it seems like this is the first step in potentially regaining...
We regularly have elections in
or at least having a fair
in
shot
which
at this
more
point.
Democratic voters vote and we end up with less representation.
Correct.
That happens all the time.
All the time. Every 2 years it happens.
I mean, even in Bush v. Gore, we had a situation where more people voted for Al Gore. Enough so that Florida business didn't matter at all.
Right. But we had
there were like a million more votes for him.
But we
or
had
something.
Way more Democratic votes
when
you counted up all the House races.
When you count the House races, Democratic voters always end up Democrats cast more votes every election year.
Yeah.
And they never seem to win anything for it.
I know.
So in any case, this is important. I think that this is becoming more problematic in a lot of states that are not looking to be in the grasp of some sort of like obnoxious majority forever. Yeah. You know, California has independent redistricting. Arizona obviously is
now
a state that did and was challenged and now can again.
Yeah.
There's a few other states that do, but I think it's also like something that other states are going to have to start doing because it's getting out of hand. Because it's up to the states how they redistrict themselves.
Yeah.
And like, you can't trust states to do a lot
state
of things.
Legislatures,
you can trust some states to do things, but you can't trust all of them.
No.
Like, we're trusting Mississippi to do anything?
Or Kansas?
Like, we shouldn't be...
No.
They can't even correctly rule their own state budgets. Like, it's out of control.
Yeah.
In any case, in bad news, we once again were reminded that As we said last week, there are only 6 thinking people currently on the Supreme Court.
Right.
There are 9 justices, and only 6 of them are thinking people.
Right.
Thomas, Scalia, and what's his name? Roberts are like, or Alito.
No, Alito, right.
Are like not thinking people.
Right.
Like they're non-thinkers.
Right.
Now, Kennedy and Roberts are only medium thinkers. They are thinking people, but they're just evil.
Correct. They're thinking people, but they're thinking...
thinking evil thoughts.
They're thinking wrong sometimes. Right.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're siding with evil. They're evil. They're evil-siders.
Yeah.
They think wrong thoughts. They're thinking,
right.
though. They're
yes.
actively doing it. It's
right.
just like, you know, they can hear things and, like,
yes.
sometimes know that those things are things they could change their mind about.
Right.
But
yes.
they they're not think... They're not sort of predisposed to think the right things.
No, correct.
In any case, they're back to their old tricks.
Right.
There was an EPA case that came up that had to do with the Clean Air Act, because the EPA had interpreted the Clean Air Act to mean that they could
make
the air cleaner.
Oh, I see.
That they
okay.
could, yeah, they could set.
That's wrong.
They were setting
That's
emission
wrong.
Standards for power plants.
Yeah.
But they did it without first considering what the financial cost to the industry would be.
Right.
And, like, also, that's not their job. Like,
I think
it says
it
no.
Is
there, it's specifically
though, right?
protected in the Clean Air Act. Power companies are specifically protected in the Clean Air Act in a way
okay.
that is wildly unfair.
Right.
I mean, it's yeah. not the EPA's. Whoa, just gonna knock the mic. It's not the
yeah.
EPA's mandate to protect corporate profits, is what I mean.
Right. No.
The Clean
right,
Air
of course
Act
not. Right.
is written to protect corporate profits.
Right.
So they were getting dinged for not correctly protecting corporate profits
right.
over the health and public safety
right.
of everyone else, which
yeah.
is their mandate.
Correct.
So in any case, it's a 5-4 ruling. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Scalia wrote the majority. Surprise again.
Oh boy.
But it was not as exciting a majority. He's not as good at winning things.
No,
he's not funny when he wins.
No. He's more fun at being mad. He's
a
bad loser.
Yeah, he's a bad loser in the
yeah.
best way.
Yeah.
Kagan wrote the dissent. But basically, they ruled that the EPA had to consider the sort of like corporate profit machine
right.
when they were writing these rules, and they couldn't unduly burden the
yeah.
energy industry in making clean air rules, basically.
Right.
What
I heard an interview with the head of the EPA. Actually, they were talking about this on Bill Maher recently, and these are now a couple years old.
Yeah.
They are obviously moving forward. This most directly affects coal.
Right.
Moving forward, it's not great, obviously,
but they've invested in a lot of these changes already.
They have already invested them. Like, they're not going to go. They're not going to regress to where they were.
Right.
You know, they might not go further because...
Why would they? It's expensive.
Why would they now? And apparently if it's too expensive, then we can't tell them that they have to. But at least these specific laws that were sort of being debated in this case have already basically been fixed by the coal companies because they've...
Right.
They're there already.
Right.
They did it.
Right. They already have had to comply with these regulations.
Right.
So a lot of these things are going to sort of stay at least at the level that the investment had reached.
Right, exactly.
Which is medium good news.
So it wasn't a total loss,
but also,
I guess,
when you talk about cost, I think the EPA's attorney made an interesting point, which is that the health benefits of this rule dwarf the cost to the industry. The public gets $9 of health benefits for every $1 the industry spends.
Mm.
So when you're really talking about cost-benefit analysis,
right.
which is a term that I know is a term, and I'm not sure I used it correctly, I do... It's one thing to talk about the cost to the industry and not put it in the context of the health savings to everyone else.
Yeah.
It's another when you realize that every dollar that they're spending puts $9,
right.
you know, of benefits back on us. Like,
right.
that is worth the investment.
Hello.
I mean,
yeah.
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
In any case, exciting news, guys.
Aha.
Jenny McCarthy lost.
She sure did.
She...
And Jim Carrey.
And
did
Jim
you,
Carrey.
And,
well, they used to be together. And, like, the two of them
did.
Are a nutbag
yeah.
couple. SB 277, the pro-vaccination law that was in the California state legislature, has passed.
That's right. If you would have told me that California passed a law that would have joined us with West Virginia and Mississippi, I would have said...
Panicked
that,
a little.
That is probably a bad law, but it's not.
It's not. When we're basically, like, dealing with third world vaccination rates in California.
Right.
They probably were in West Virginia and Mississippi, too.
Right. For different reasons.
For different reasons.
Yeah.
So now we all have this law to protect us.
Right.
Basically, the law says that you have to vaccinate your kids to send them to both public and private school.
Yeah.
Which means that if you want to be an anti-vaxxer in California now, you're going to have to homeschool your kids.
Yep.
Now, this is probably going to be challenged in the courts because A lot of money is behind these anti-vaxxers.
Totally.
These are rich
people.
We've
seen them.
Yeah.
In the
They're
flesh.
Very organized.
Yeah.
But it yeah, is a good sign people. That common sense is ultimately a thing that a majority of people are interested in.
That's right.
And it basically, there is a way that you can get an exemption, but your doctor has to provide the exemption. It can't
right,
come.
It's medical.
It has to be a medical exemption.
It can't be personal,
right.
whatever
You can't just
it is
claim that you don't believe in vaccinations,
right.
which is good because the whole point of vaccinations is that everyone is safe when everyone gets them.
That's right.
And it's an interesting, the people that were part of the coalition that brought this issue to light and really pushed for this law were like, it was like a woman who whose baby had gotten the measles in the mm-hmm. Disneyland outbreak.
Yeah, sure.
It was a woman who was attending like a Waldorf school somewhere hippy dippy and was realized that 50% of her kids' classmates were not getting vaccinated and
yeah.
was like, I realize that you like can't talk about this with the parents there because everyone gets so nuts, but like it was worth making enemies because I want my kid to be safe
yeah,
in school.
Of course.
And it was like someone whose parents had died of polio or something. Like it was
yeah.
like people, it was like an interesting
collection.
Bunch.
Yeah.
But in any case, I'm excited that this applies to both public and private schools.
Yeah,
I
know,
forget.
It's surprising.
I feel like we've mentioned that before on the podcast, but I keep forgetting that the private school thing is big.
Because right, because that's where a
that
lot
was
of these
where,
kids
that's
are
where
going.
These kids are.
It's the
this
rich
is rich
private
kids.
Schools. Yeah, exactly.
It's not public
yeah.
school kids are not the ones who are not getting vaccines.
No,
it's the rich private school kids.
Yeah,
and like
whose parents think they can, you know, cure this
think,
with green well, algae
and also
and
whose parents think that they're above the sort of public good.
Happened to, right, exactly.
I mean,
yes,
that's ultimately
that
what this
too.
Boils down to because
yeah.
you're if, even if they believe they're taking a risk, it's a risk for the public good, and they don't believe that they have to participate in the public good.
Right.
That's. I mean, and also they're basing it on faulty science, so that's another
well,
problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, so there is not actually a risk. But even if they believed there was a risk, if it's a risk that everyone's taking for everyone's safety,
then
like
you
still have to do it because
yeah.
that's what's living in a society is all about.
Right.
Like, in yep. any case, that's exciting. Less exciting is the fact that we're now up to 8 church fires
oh my
of African American churches in the South.
I know.
It's like
God.
Everywhere in the South, people are just burning down black churches.
And we know, yeah, we know that at least some of them are arson.
3 of them are confirmed arson. 1 of them is confirmed not arson. 4 of them are confirmed nothing, but there were bad lightning storms, so some of them are being maybe blamed on lightning storms in parts of the South.
Yeah.
But these are all churches that have a history of, like, KKK fires.
Right. I mean,
so
one, it, yeah,
it,
one of these
recently
was burned
is in the
90s. 90s, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's one in South Carolina that was burned to the ground in 1995. So KKK is still up to their old tricks, if you were wondering. I was, because I hadn't
yeah.
heard much from them recently, but
yeah.
here they are,
mm-hmm.
still burning black churches.
Yep.
But so Twitter has had who is burning black churches trending, but none of the major news outlets are talking about this.
No, especially not Fox News.
Especially not Fox News.
No.
A news outlet that's especially not talking about this.
Yeah.
But so that's terrible and continuing, and we don't have any news to report because no one's investigating it, because the Southern Poverty Law Center is the only people that are talking about it.
Right.
And then Twitter.
Yeah.
In other black church news...
Oh my God, this story
the most like,
almost
offensively annoying thing
yeah.
that's going on in the world is
so,
happening.
Amber Roof, sister of Dylan Roof, who, you know,
shot up the church
in
Charleston.
Church, yeah. Is really sad because that whole thing just ruined her wedding,
totally
guys.
Ruined her wedding. She was supposed to get married on June 21st, which is 4 days after the massacre.
Her life is so hard.
Yeah, no, it's super sad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you plan the perfect wedding.
I know.
And your dumb idiot brother has to come and shoot.
Shoots up a bunch of people.
Shoots up
at
a bunch
church.
Of people at a church
yeah.
in a racially motivated crime. And then,
yeah.
then what are you going to do with all those investments you made?
I know.
She started a fundraising page to
nope.
get us to donate. So that she can reschedule her wedding.
Yep.
Because that's what's really most important to me at this moment, is making sure she has a dream wedding.
That's right. Yes, and that's the obviously the most important thing to her, too, because from the page it says, we know money cannot replace the wedding we lost.
Oh, man.
Even the wording there
is
just like, that
worst.
Can't
That can't be your wording.
That can't be it.
No.
Okay. And our perfect day. However, it will help us to create new memories and a new start with our new family. The money will pay not only for a rescheduled wedding, but also to send us on our dream honeymoon.
That really is
Listen,
what's most
lady.
Important to me at
yeah.
this moment.
Yeah.
I need this lady to have a dream honeymoon.
That's right.
That's what if we learned anything
yeah.
from this.
And look, she, I was going to say she might be lovely. She's obviously not
She's
because
not
she did
lovely.
This. She's not, she might not, here's a better way to word it.
She might not be
she
smart.
She might not be smart, and she might not be a person who's going to walk in and kill a bunch of people in
right.
a church.
True.
Okay?
True.
She might be. Also.
Right, we don't
I
know.
Don't know. But, like, you have this just.
Have a better plan.
Yeah,
people are posting a lot of things on the fundraising page, as you might not be surprised to hear.
Yeah.
Most of those things are being diligently deleted. Yeah. So someone donated $5 just so that they could write what all the things that had been deleted were.
Yeah.
So that's kind of hilarious.
On some level, I'm with her. That does suck if that's when you're supposed to get married.
Shitty luck.
But like, you don't take to the internet and ask.
You don't ask for for money.
By selling your sob story.
No. Not at all.
I mean,
that is too bad and also just too bad. Like, exactly. It's going to remain too bad.
Period. Yep.
Right. Make a new memory.
Right.
Married at City Hall. Like to stay, at this point.
These days. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in very exciting international news.
Totally.
Greece had a referendum vote today where they were voting on a bailout measure that Germany and France were trying to force down their throats. And they were just like, nope. Screw you. They were everyone was threatening that they would get kicked off the euro, and they were sort of like, okay.
Fine.
Right. Like,
yeah, they're just sort of like giving like zero not giving fucks right a now, shit right,
right yeah. now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they're really like living the dream. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, put in recent historical context, I see why Germany's frustrated with them. Put in larger historical context, I feel like everyone should be telling Germany to fuck off at every possible moment. We're talking about a country that we rebuilt without making them pay us back after World War II. And they have basically like raped Greece.
Yeah.
And these debts that Greece has, which is what a lot of the developing world has, but also a lot of like Southern Europe and Mediterranean Europe has, you know, it's a problem in Italy. It's a problem in Spain. These were done in a predatory. That's the one I'm looking for. They were done in a predatory way. These were not done with Greece's best interests at heart.
Right.
Because austerity measures are in nobody's best interest in an actual country.
Exactly.
So Germany can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, they shouldn't have. I mean, Greece shouldn't have to be doing all of these austerity measures if they don't freaking want to. I mean, I understand they owe a debt, but I mean, like.
No, but this was not a debt that was given on fair terms.
Correct. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And I also have personal feelings about the euro in Greece, which is that a lot of people in Greece saw their cost of living go up astronomically when they went on the euro, and so probably are kind of like, all right, we'll go off the euro. Like, they probably don't care.
Yeah.
But it's sort of exciting, and this is, you know, they have this new prime minister, Spiros, who has been sort of leading the charge and was leading the charge on the no vote here. A lot of the conservative parties there were panicking, and they were like, oh my God, what's going to happen to our economy? And everyone was just like, meh. But there was also a little bit of a question. You know, they called this referendum last week, so no one in Greece really had time to read what the bailout.
Anyway.
It was like written in like confusing language. There were at least a few transliteration issues in the Greek translation of what the bailout measures were.
Yeah.
So no one could understand what they were voting on anyway.
Yeah.
So that's another problem that is also probably going to play out in the courts. I know that there were two people that sued because they were sort of like, what are you trying to make us... we're not financial analysts. Like, what, what are you trying to make all the Greek people understand what this is? Like, that's not fair.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's sort of an exciting, I think, move. Greece is a little bit of a wild card, you know? This is what they do. And I feel like they are at least in a little bit of a position to do this because they're not in like the actual third world.
No,
you know, they're still part of Europe, and Europe still needs them to be some level of functional in order to remain functional itself.
Yeah.
You know, Europe can pull this shit with like random countries in Africa that fall apart completely, and they just are sort of like, meh, oh well, we're not, you know. But I mean, with Greece, they really need Greece to maintain some level of stability.
Yeah,
and Greece can be very unstable. It can go unstable very fast there. So they need Greece to maintain some level of stability in order to just like keep everyone happy.
Right.
So this is sort of exciting.
Yeah,
I'm so excited about what's going on in Greece. Like, I feel like I also hope that other countries start trying to do this. Because I think our whole plan, the whole way that we invest in poor nations and developing nations has to change.
Totally.
It has to change quickly. You know, every developing nation in the world is in a massive amount of debt to the
Western world
and
the IMF
and these have not proven. You know, like, it's one thing, the investments help when they come, but the austerity measures that follow always make everything crumble apart.
Yeah.
And so there's no reason
to look at it.
There's no reason that things should continue this way.
Yeah.
And there's no reason also that like we should build a country up just to benefit corporate profits and then take away all the things that were benefiting the people as soon as we get them stable enough for the corporations.
Totally.
Like, that's not how we should be doing this.
Yeah.
So I think I'm so excited that Greece is doing this.
Yeah.
I feel like
more power to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Well, and it's also great because this is something that their prime minister has been talking about, and everyone was like, good luck with that. And this is a way, I think, for him to be like, the Greek people want me to do this.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't know what they were voting on.
Right.
But it gives him a little bit of, you know, credibility to do that. In any case, finally, the most important debate ever to be waged by the most important people in our nation.
That's right.
Has finally come to a head this week.
Yes.
Should you be adding English peas to your guacamole? People are very angry about this.
People are so
The New York
mad.
Times had the gall to suggest that adding green peas to guacamole is a good idea.
Yeah.
People landed on many sides of the aisle on this.
I was going to say,
I'm not that offended by it.
I'm not either. I think that sounds
peas
like
are good
it
in
could
things.
Potentially be delicious.
Is it traditional guacamole if you add peas? No.
No, but it's not going to kill anybody. It might taste delicious.
No one's going to die.
Yeah.
One of our friends used to make a pea dip of some sort that looked like guacamole.
I texted her this week. Yeah. She, of course, being the non-lover of news that she is, had no idea what I was talking about, but I texted her earlier this week.
Of course you
said,
did. It's the first thing I thought of.
I was like, yeah, that's what I said too. Yeah. I was like, this whole pea debate is made me think of you all week long. She was like, what?
Okay.
Bless her heart.
Right. But in any case, if there's, I mean, that's a delicious dip.
It is.
So I don't see why we could, like, why not add peas to guacamole? It's just glad sweetness to it.
But everyone had to, it tore up Twitter, and I mean, it was just
Here's
like,
how you know. Here's what the president thinks about it. Because we know what the president thinks about it, because he tweeted
he
about
had
it.
Because he had to voice his opinion.
Respect the New York Times, but not buying peas in guacamole. Onions, garlic, hot peppers, classic.
Classic,
interesting.
Okay. All right, there you go.
So that's, I wonder where he lands on tomatoes in guacamole.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a fan. Maybe he's not.
I am, too. He doesn't have it in his ingredients list.
Jeb Bush, you don't put peas in guacamole.
Well.
He would know.
He would know.
Being from Texas.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, being white and actually from New Hampshire or Maine or wherever he's from. Uh-huh.
The Texas GOP got in on it, too.
They're not happy.
No. They said the New York Times declared war on Texas when they suggested adding green peas to guacamole.
When did Texas invent guacamole?
Thank you.
Like,
they didn't.
No, they didn't. They're just a place that, like many places, enjoys guacamole.
Everyone.
We have guacamole here in Southern California.
Yeah. Once you're
introduced
to
guacamole. You know why? Because we're just overrun with avocados.
I had guacamole in Iowa, people.
Yeah.
Where there's Mexican restaurants, there is guacamole.
You can buy guacamole in any state in the Union. I bet Alaska has guacamole.
I'm quite certain that they would.
I mean, they would.
Yeah.
Hawaii, but guacamole everywhere. It's like guacamole belongs to all of us. But while it belongs
to
all of us,
dip.
It belongs to none of us because it belongs to a different country. It belongs to Mexico.
Yes.
So the New York Times can suggest that's maybe fusion-y, but they're not allowed to.
Well, and I don't think they were declaring that this is the new definitive recipe for guacamole.
No, they were
just
suggesting it was a good idea. Anyway, this was like blowing up online all week.
It was so crazy.
So ridiculous and kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
But also I can't believe that the president had to weigh in on it.
I know. That's nuts.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's right.
We'll be back next week to... No one knows what we're going to talk about next week, because we've hit real high summer at this point.
I know.
There might not be news, but we'll be here.
Well, the House comes back this week.
They
have things to do.
That'll be exciting.
/ avoid doing.
Also, Bernie Monium is only going to get more exciting
it's not
every moment.
Down.
No.
No.
All right. So we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.